Hello, my name is John Tonsi, and welcome to the Connect podcast with Indianola First Assembly.
And I'm Joel Simpson, and our goal is to build community and relationships through sharing life experiences and God stories to inspire and connect with each other on a deeper level.
So today we have Didi Rakin with us. Didi, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Indianola. Well, outside. Actually, we built a home on my parents' farm 30 years ago. So I've pretty much been in the same place almost my whole life.
So where's this farm? What direction from town?
We are east of Indianola. We're on S-23 on the way to Milo. Well, just 1 mile off of 92.
Oh, sure.
On S-23. Yeah. It used to be called Rural Route 3.
Oh.
That was our mailing address, RR3.
It's grown up a lot in that area.
Oh my gosh. When we built our home there, there were five homes from the mile that we are off of 92. And there's close to 30 now.
Wow.
30 years later, there's close to 30 homes there. So it has changed a lot.
So your family owned how much land in that area?
60 acres.
Okay.
Yeah. 60 acres where my parents' farm is.
Okay. And so is that south of you then?
Straight north of us is where my parents, their driveway, and then come around the corner and it's our driveway.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
The boys used to have a path from our yard.
Oh yeah.
Through the field to my mom and dad's house.
That's fun.
It was a lot of fun.
I grew up next door to my grandparents. There's pros and cons, you know.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. My dad would say the same thing. Yes, that is a true story. But growing up, raising the boys in the country was just such a huge blessing.
Absolutely.
Such a huge blessing. So we love it. In fact, Mac and Libby are getting ready to build a house in between us, our house and my parents' house. So
nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah, I drive by that. So when I go down to Sheridan, where we keep our airplane, then I take that road when I ride my motorcycle because it's more windy going that way, going through like Milo and Lacona.
Yep.
If we're just driving, though, then we just take 65.
Yeah.
A little more direct.
So Kyle grew up in Lacona.
Oh, okay.
And so did my mom.
Okay.
Funny story. I had to make sure when I met him that he wasn't
a cousin.
Literally had to ask because my mom was from a huge, huge family. She has 11, there were 11 kids in her family, but her, you know, cousin wise, she probably 40 or 50 of them. And I was like, I wonder if we're related. We were not.
That's good.
Good to find that out on the front end.
It was very distant. Very distant.
John and I are related, actually.
Yes.
We're cousins.
Yes.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
A little bit. I'm not exactly sure, but. You can skip all this part out too, but anyway.
We are second cousins once removed.
I don't know how that math works. Like once it's past first cousin, I'm like, it's just a cousin. I don't know.
Yeah. So your dad and my grandpa are first cousins.
Right.
And then my dad and Didi would be their children second cousins. So then like Dylan and I would be third cousins. But to be connected, so Didi would be a second cousin once removed. That's the line. So her and I would be second cousins once removed.
Yeah.
You're going to have to scooch closer to your mic.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
He was explaining with
this. I was using a lot of hand gestures.
A lot of hand gestures in there. That's crazy. Small world.
Yeah.
So you guys, how many, I guess, generations have been like in this area? It's been
well. My parents actually were the first ones to move to Indianola. My dad was in Carlisle. My mom was in Lacona, and so they shortly after they got married, they bought their farm in Indianola. And were you guys in Carlisle?
No, we were never in Carlisle. My grandpa was on the east side of Des Moines.
Okay,
and then I grew up on the south side of Des Moines, so close, but
yeah.
I mean, everybody's just right around there.
Mm-hmm.
But Carlisle is where most of them are at.
Yeah.
Most of them?
The family.
Yeah, most of that side of the family. Yeah, it's Carlisle.
That's funny.
And we've always, on both sides, had close-knit families, you know, on all sides, I think, of all sides of our family. But yeah, which doesn't really happen so much anymore, sadly.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, so my grandparents moved here and then my parents moved here. So like, I have no, like, it's not multi-generational in this area. It's my grandparents and that's it.
Yeah.
So all my cousins and everything are all across the U.S. and various different places. So we didn't have a lot of close family growing up.
Yeah.
So what is a favorite memory of growing up?
Wow. On the Van Ryswyck side, which is my dad's side of the family, we were together a lot. My dad and his two brothers, there were 9 grandkids. We spent a lot of time at my grandparents. They lived in Carlisle on Scotch Ridge Road. And every year, and sometimes twice a year, but every year there was always a family trap shoot in the field.
Yep.
Out in the field. And, you know, I mean, hundreds of family members came to this, you know, and it started early in the morning and it went till late because everybody got their turn. And I remember, I think I was probably 9, I suppose, maybe 10. I wasn't really big enough to hold the gun and not get knocked over. And my grandpa was bound and determined that it was my year to get to try, you know, to not kill anyone probably, but to just, so he literally stood behind me so that the gun didn't, you know, kick back and knock me down or whatever. But it was like, I can still put myself in that position and knowing, you know, I didn't hit anything that first time or whatever, but just that confidence that he had, that, because I was not a very big, I was a kind of a little child, you know, but he just had that confidence that I could do that. I could do those hard things, you know, or whatever. So that's funny because I would have probably not thought of that had we not circled back around. But those are the things that I think I miss as an adult is just how much we all invested into family. You know, it's getting to be the holiday season and we would traipse our kids 3 and 4 and 5 places on Christmas Day because that's what you did, you know. Yeah. And we've made it to the next generation where everybody kind of likes to have their own Christmas in their pajamas at their house, you know. And so those are the kinds of things I think that where I see the world has changed a lot, you know, and those are hard, but it seems like that's the way it's going, you know. But growing up, I would say family time was so important. With my mom being one of 11, you know, my grandma had Sunday dinner quite often, you know, and you'd go down there and there was always somebody to play with and do something with, and just aunts and uncles. I mean, everybody raised everybody, you know, and I think that was just an important part of growing up because your parents might have had, you know, the rules, but everybody was kind of on that same playing field. So, yeah, as far as like, I feel like I had a very, very good childhood, very good childhood. And growing up in the country once again, you know, in that same area or whatever, it was a peaceful, you know, time. It wasn't as busy as we were. It still didn't feel rush, rush, rush. So.
It's so funny. So that farm on Scotch Ridge.
Yeah.
I remember going when I was a kid and I was probably 8 or 9 when they gave me the shotgun for the first time and like was not prepared for it at all. And yeah, I remember the kick on it and I was like, it hurt so bad.
Absolutely. You don't want to cry. And you don't
but you didn't want to show that. And then we got to climb on one of the barns because it was like really low to the ground. Yes. The roof was.
Yep.
We climb up there and then with our BB guns and shoot the blackbirds. They were always, get up there and shoot the blackbirds so they'll stop bugging the cows. So we got sent up there to do that all day long while they were out shooting. But, yep.
Yeah. Wonderful memories about that farm and just the, you know, everybody was everybody's friend back then, you know, and everybody did life together back then. And kids could be trusted with guns. That's funny that you say that because one year for Christmas, my cousin got a BB gun for Christmas, my cousin Chuck. And it's cold, obviously. So my grandpa just sent us down to the basement to shoot the BB gun at the brick wall in the basement. Nothing could go wrong in that area, right?
Yeah.
I remember the moms finally realizing it was pretty quiet and freaking out that you've got six kids downstairs shooting BB guns at a brick wall.
Yeah.
Somehow we survived growing up, even though we did that stuff,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And I don't think they sat and worried as quite as much about every move that we made as we probably do now. But anyway.
So where off of Scotchridge was that farm?
It's on Scotchridge.
On Scotchridge.
So it's
it's still there.
Yeah, it's big. It's still there.
Across the street, I think it's like almost right across the street, is that great big, they have the new silos and the big white buildings right there. Isn't it?
That's on down the road a little ways.
Is it down a little
bit? Yeah, so they're on kind of the straightaway before. So there's a new development that's going in, mm-hmm. like after the curves. That's my Uncle Denny is doing that.
Oh, okay.
So the big tall brick. The huge brick that's on the south side of the road with the big red barn.
Yeah.
That's the house that that's the house that my grandparents had. Yeah.
Okay. So my in-laws live off of 140th, just north of Scotchridge, okay. kind of back
yep.
in there.
Yep.
And it was his grandfather that had like 80 acres back in there. And
what was his name?
Baber. Okay. I don't know. I assume that's his grandpa's last name. I don't know.
Okay.
But he still lives on 40 acres of that okay. back in there now too. But yeah, he talks about it was his grandpa's property. And so I'm sure they knew each other because it wasn't
sure.
far away.
No. And everybody knew everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Small world. That's fun. And it's fun. Yeah. You don't think about those memories. Like, I don't know. I enjoy reminiscing a little bit.
Absolutely.
That's a good time.
Absolutely.
So you went to Indianola High School?
I did. Yep.
Did you go to college after high school?
I went to cosmetology school right okay. out of high school. I graduated in May and started there in June the same year. And then Kyle and I got married in September of that year.
The year you graduated?
The year I graduated. 18 and knew everything.
So, okay.
Poor
so
guy.
I mean, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
When we're young, I don't know that we understand it, you know, but, so walk us back a little bit. So how did you and Kyle meet then? And like, how did
family reunion?
John's family reunion. So he is older than I am. And he had moved up to Indianola cause he was working in Des Moines. And that was back, in the days where everybody hung out on the square and everybody hung out in front of Pete's, you know, back your cars in and whatever. And so, you know, he doesn't know, neither one of you probably know, but I mean, people would just drive around the square. It was busy on the square all the time or whatever. And so he was friends with some of my friends and we got introduced and he had a brand new Jeep and I had always wanted, I didn't care. I would have taken an old Jeep. I just wanted a Jeep. So
it wasn't Kyle.
It wasn't exactly.
It was a Jeep.
He knows this. He would be, he'd be shaking his head right now. Because, you know, he just bought me a Jeep a couple years ago. Because he said, when he got rid of that one, he said, I'll get you one of these years. And he did. But anyway, we just actually just kind of met each other that way. We got to be good friends. He was 4 years older than I was. And my dad's like, absolutely not, you know, and I'm like, but dad, he did not want a girlfriend at all. And so we kind of just got to know each other pretty much that whole summer.
How old were you?
I was 16.
You were 16.
And he was 20.
So,
yeah. 16
I can
and 20. Yeah,
I
exactly.
Yeah.
Now it seems like weird, but back then it didn't seem weird at all. But I would say at the same time, I have never really been a peer person as far as like being in a peer
sure,
group
yeah.
or whatever. I could not wait to get out of high school. I just never really ever fit into that surfacey mold of what all of that looked like. So I don't know that I would say I was mainly mature for my age, but I also wasn't probably a typical high school.
Yeah,
I just couldn't wait to get done with high school.
I'm with you.
And I kind of knew exactly what I wanted to do anyway. I knew I wanted to go into the cosmetology field, and I wanted to get in there and get out of there as fast as I possibly could, you know, or whatever. But it was several months after we had met, we kind of started dating, and then a year later, we got engaged. I was engaged through my whole entire senior year, which was weird to people, but it seemed really normal to me. Of course, my parents were like, honey, you're too young. Well, so when you tell me that, I'm going to probably just work hard to prove you wrong, you know?
Yeah.
So we will celebrate 40 years of marriage next year. So,
and congratulations.
Thank you. There's been a lot of, you know, ups and downs and bumps in the road, and we've taken the long path in a lot of areas. But I think when people do doubt, you know, doubt you, I had a lot of people, especially when I first started working in the salon, and they found out that I was married, you know, like, oh, you're not old enough to be married. And it's like, make another mark. It's like, I'll show you. You know, I'll show you. But anyway, but we got to grow up together. And like I said, we didn't do a lot of it right the first time, but we kept pushing. And it was a year after we got married that I actually became a Christian. And through one of my aunts, just sharing the love of the Lord with me. I was raised in a church, you know, I didn't get it. I really didn't get it at all, but I went, you know, or whatever. And then it was several years later before Kyle really made that commitment, but he knew something drastically had changed in me, you know, or whatever. But the Lord was just very faithful to us in that time. And we were young, you know, and, but we just didn't give up on each other, and we learned to not give up on ourselves either. So that was good. We had Mac 2.5 years after we got married. So we were still young, you know, but I don't know. We wouldn't trade him, you know, trade any of them. And,
well, yeah, you're done raising him now.
Passed him on. All of them. We just shot them all out of there. It's like, okay, guys, see you later. But no, I mean, Casey, let me think. Dylan was just a baby when we decided we were going to move out to the country, you know, and that was a good turning point for us, you know, just being back out where everything was a little more comfortable and a little bit more, like I said, peaceful, you know?
Hmm. Yeah, it is interesting how we have that natural tendency to be like, I'm going to prove people wrong.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
How important it is, you know, to have people that believe in you and encourage you through those, like, I mean, even just coming back to you were talking about, who was it, your grandpa or your uncle, that your grandpa with the shotgun, and just having people that believe in you that you can do it is really, really important. And I think gets lost sometimes of how impactful that can be in somebody's life. And
right,
but good life advice there of just don't give up on each other, don't give up on ourselves, right? Like,
exactly,
persevere. It's worth it.
It is worth it. You know, you do get to those middle years where it's just like, oh gosh, can we keep doing this? You know, can we keep doing this? And I look back at it now, because there were plenty of times in there where it's like, okay, I don't know that we can keep, you know, making these same choices and the same outcomes. And, you know, and I would say by the time we hit, you know, 20 years, it was just like, okay, this is starting to make, you know, I mean, it sounds sad that I would say 20 years, but I mean, I work with women every single day, you know, and I've had multiple marriages that after 25 years are just like, I'm done, you know, I'm done. And I think now with grandkids, and I'm just so grateful that we didn't, just didn't walk away from that, because now is when the fruit of all of that comes to, you know, the surface, and you get to see with your grandkids all the amazing things that you missed with your own kids, you know, and that's so much fun.
I think it is. There is an interesting kind of, I mean, it's just ebbs and flows of relationships in general, but it is. So Amanda and I are coming up, it'll be 20 years next year, you know, and it is one of those where we've, you know, our kids are getting older. We have, they're all teenagers now. So you, like, life changes, right? And you have to change with it, and you have to make conscious decisions of like, we're going to reinvest in this relationship, right? Like, what, you know, what has been working or what has worked in the past doesn't mean that's going to continue. It's not just like, maintain. It takes continuous investment and changing and adapting with those things. And but yeah, if you don't make that mm-hmm. intentional decision, you can get to a point where you just want to give up, right?
Exactly. And I don't know that we hear enough that, and I do think that our pastoral staff is good about talking about, you know, where God and then spouse and mm-hmm. then kids and, you know, and then down the line or whatever. Obviously the world does not say that to us. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see parents that literally worship their kids, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that once you get to that next step where the kids are starting to go out the door, you know, and they're off to college or they're getting married or whatever, like you said, reinvesting in us, we're still learning that. I mean, we are still learning that because we've got little grandkids that are in and out, you know, quite a bit. And we love that. It's exhausting. Not going to lie. It's exhausting. But we absolutely love and look forward to that. But we're starting to get to the point too, where they're getting more in school, having more of their own activities to do. And it's like, we're learning how to start finding activities with friends, you know, and common interests that we have that we haven't really invested in yet, you know? And so that's been kind of a two-sided, you know, it's easy to just be at home and become a hermit, mm-hmm. especially this time of the year, if I didn't have to leave home. But then the Lord's like, that's not what I'm asking you to do. You know, I'm not asking you to just sit at home. You've got to, you know, get going and still stay relevant to those kinds of things. But, and it's kind of, I don't know, there's a sense of contentment that goes along with that. And then, but you also on our end anyway, you know, we're balancing out, sometimes having to say no to the kids because we're not so good at that, because we do honestly love having the little ones in and out. We had 7 of them stay the night with us not too long ago. And it's crazy.
That's a lot.
It's
yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. Usually once a year we try to have all except the babies stay. So, and the babies are one, almost, we've got one that's one and one that will be one on Saturday. But a year ago, I think we had all of them stay. I wouldn't recommend it in the winter. It's not so good in the winter. Tough. Summer is much better. You know, when there's 10 of them, it's better to do it in the summer months. Because sure.
yep.
it gets a little exactly.
Good advice.
Exactly. We'll sit outside and just let them be crazy and loud and all the things or whatever. But you know, being able to, that's what somebody needs to write the book on, the balance of both of those things. Because we know how fleeting our grandkids' time is, you know, and it's going so fast that we don't want to miss that. You know, we don't want to miss out on that because we know it will go quick. But then obviously sometimes saying yes to us, you know, a little bit yeah. more than what we do. But we're getting there. We're making great strides in that. So that's been good.
What I find funny is like you probably didn't have a problem telling your kids no when they were living in your house. But now that you have grandkids, you're like, we struggle to say no.
You're not wrong on that. It's like we had these, you know, definite yeses and nos with the boys. And now it's like, oh, well, that can slide a little. Probably wasn't that imperative back then, but we didn't know any better. So yeah, that's the beauty of the grandparent role. Right. You know, that's the awesome part of it. But we also, I'm going to preface this because everybody will hear it. We also do try to follow to the best of our ability or common sense, you know, the rules that the parents have too, because it is different with the kids and we don't want to be dishonoring to, you know, the way that they're raising their children too. But for yeah. the most part, we kind of just can all, you know, make it work and it goes well. The kids have so much fun playing together. I mean, Sullivan was there one time and the only time he ever sees Rachel and Lexi and Jocelyn, our granddaughters that live in Nebraska, the only time he sees them is at our house. So he gets there one day and he's like, where are the girls? I said, well, honey, they're at their house. He goes, where do they live? Because he just assumed that they lived at our house.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so it was just so cute when he was like, well, where are the girls? You know, and so, yeah, it's been kind of funny on that end. But they get there and they're like, grandma, when are the cousins coming here? you know, and the older ones, they'll be like, it's kind of boring here when the kids are, when my cousins aren't here, you know, and I always laugh and I'm like, I don't think it's boring at all. Define boring.
Yeah, right.
So anyway.
So you've talked a little bit about your kids. Tell us a little bit more about your family, like your kids and then their families.
So we have four sons. Yep.
So, yeah, you had a few hospital visits when they were growing up, probably. Yep.
We have. So, and there's almost 10 years between the oldest and the youngest. Okay. So Mac and Libby, Casey and Zoe, Dylan and Bailey, and KJ and Madeline, and then 13 grandchildren. And Maddie was our oldest step grandchild, which we lost Maddie to cancer in 2020. And Gia is in sixth grade. And then we go from there down to Anna will be one on Saturday. So we have kind of three pods. We have the older girls, and then we have five that are 2 years apart, and then another five that are 2 years apart. So we kind of have these clusters, and it's really loud. But it's a good kind of loud, and you know, they're just so much joy. I remember one time I was at my grandma's, my mom's mom's, and I just had Casey. So I just had the two boys, and my grandpa was sitting in his chair, which I don't know. He was 90 some years old when he passed away. So I don't know how old he was. And he was just starting with dementia at that point in time. But my grandma still had all of my mom and her siblings' graduation pictures on her wall. She just had never taken, I mean, they were just there. And I said to my grandpa, I just shook my head. I said, Grandpa, I can't imagine 11 kids. I said, I can barely keep my head above water with two. And he said, you know, honey, he said, I sit here day after day and I look at those pictures. And he said, there isn't a one of them on that wall that I wish I didn't have. Mm. And he said, because I have one, you know, to me, he said, I have one of your mother and, you know, one of each one of them. And he said, I don't really think of it as this big group. I just see them each as the individuals that they are. And I thought, what amazing wisdom, because that's what I say to everybody. You know, they're like, oh my gosh, you have so many grandkids. I'm like, no, I have one of each. You know, I have one of each of these grandchildren. And my grandpa Van Ryswyk on the other side, he was the kind of grandpa that made each one of us, there were nine of us grandchildren, each one of us thought we were his favorite. And that is cool. A talent. And
yes.
I'm not kidding. And a blessing. When he passed away, which was right before Christmas, and we all get together, Christmas was his favorite time of the year. And I said, look at that. Grandpa wanted us to all to be together on Christmas again, you know. But as we talked at his funeral, it's like we all had that sense that we really were his most favorite grandchild. And I thought, that's such a cool thing. I don't think I ever had that competition or that comparison with any of my cousins. I just knew how he made me feel. And then to find out that we all felt that exact same way. So I think that's something, you know, with breathing in and living, you know, trying to live out that grandma role to my grandchildren is such an important part of me. I know that I get a short stint with that. You know, the number of grandparents, great grandparents that come into the salon. I have one that was just there the other day, and she helped raise some of her grandchildren. She's 87, and one of her grandsons hasn't been in Indianola for 17 years, and he lives in Waukee. And it just broke my heart.
Mm.
You know, it just broke my heart. Not that I'm going to, you know, have that expectation, but I just feel like I want to take the time that I have now. We have dance parties. You know, we sing at the top of our lungs. we turn on our praise music. The kids know the ones from downstairs. We can just throw it on the TV. We record them all the time, just getting crazy downstairs, just doing their thing. Because I want them to remember that. But I want it to be a house of the Lord for my grandchildren. You know, and I want them to know that that is where our strength truly does come from. Eventually they will go their directions, you know, but I want that to be firmly planted in them. I feel like I was raised in a very loving and very, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, spirituality was always something that was very important, and especially on my mom's side of the family, you know, or whatever. But that generation, it was very private. Mm. You just didn't really ever talk about those things a whole lot. And it's like, nope, not getting off the hook on that. You know, so I feel like sharing that and making it seem like it's just everyday stuff is just something that I want to sow into my little people.
That's so important. Yeah, that's great advice. As I look at, yeah, moving into that, I want to be that same thing. I was like, take advantage of that, be the fun grandparent. Yeah. And it's so easy to get old and get bitter. I mean, right? I mean, and I'll tell you, like, that's my greatest fear is, like, I don't want to be the old, grumpy old man. Like, and so, like, I want to...
It's inevitable, Joel.
I will tell you, like, that's one thing my dad talks about, like, his dad, and he was quite a bit older, but he was 90 years old. He's in the hospital bed, and, like, the nurses are fighting over who gets to take care of him.
Wow.
Just because he brought so much joy to him, and it's like... He could have been so bitter, but he wasn't. And so it's just one of those where I'm like, that's the bar set for me that I'm exactly. like, okay, I exactly. like, that's where I need to be. Like, I want it to be where it's just like, whoever you come in contact with, you put a smile on their face, exactly. you build them up. And I will tell you, like, as you get older, it's harder because it's easier to be grumpy.
Exactly. And to see the world, you know, as you see the world change, you just think, how can it get any worse? Well, it's going to. Yeah. it's going to. I mean, we're already instructed in that. It's going to. But keeping that joy and keeping that your focus, you know, on the Lord and being able to, like you said, put a smile on somebody else's face. You know, the being goofy part or sometimes it's just being, you know, sometimes it's just being able to be that person. That if you need to sit with them, if you need to cry with them, if you need to run with them, hug them, whatever it is, because we have a lot of different personalities, obviously, in these little people, you know, and honing in on their specific needs and their specific personalities, you know. And I will say, I'm a middle child, and my middle children, grandchildren, and I sometimes butt heads. And I'm not joking when I say that. Because it's like, yep, I know how strong-willed you are. And I know the thoughts that are going through your mind because I have those same thoughts. But we're not getting stuck there. You know, we're not getting stuck there. But sometimes it's just understanding that and just scooting them away from, you know, when you have the oldest child in most families is the rule follower, you know, and usually they're pretty straight laced, you know, and then that middle one, the second one comes along, and we were not created for that. Somebody already took that job. We're gonna go the other way, you know. And so I do, you know, it used to bother me. I remember the first time somebody called me a middle child, I had no idea what that was. I was in fourth grade, and I'm like, I don't even know what that means. Well, it scarred me. I went home and I cried, and I told my dad, that's why you treat me that way, because I'm the middle and I don't matter, you know. And so I've always had a heart for those. That second born in any family, you know, it's like we're just wired differently, you know. But I do love to be able to kind of come alongside of that, whether it's my grandchildren or just people that I meet, you know, or kids that are struggling, you know. And even on like the worship team, you know, some of the younger girls or younger kids on the worship team, you know, being able to talk through some of those issues that they think are big.
Yeah.
You know, because they are at that moment, they're huge.
You bet.
You know. They're huge, but just sometimes just being that ear, you know, to listen. And it's the same thing with my sons too, you know, and daughter-in-laws, you know. It's just, we're a big family already.
That's
you
awesome.
Know, we're a big family, and just trying to blend everybody in together sometimes feels like it's the weight of the world because I think I try too hard to make everybody comfortable. And I'm learning that that's not my job. My job is to just sometimes be quiet, be available. You know, hospitality and service are my strong suits. You know, I don't like to shop. Christmas is coming. It's like, oh my gosh, I do not like to shop at all. But thankfully, the girls are pretty good about that kind of stuff. And I think they've all gotten to the less is more anyway. Because that can just get overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
So I can kind of step myself out of that sometimes and be like, I'd rather have fun and do something, you know, with the kids or do something as a family than all that extra stuff that they're going to throw away anyway.
So earlier you said that you had gotten married and then a year later you were led to the Lord by a friend.
My aunt, yeah.
But your aunt, sorry.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that? How did that happen?
So I was my aunt she owned the salon that I went to work at, and she was very instrumental with, it used to be called Christian Women's Club. Now it's Midday Connection, and actually they meet here now.
Oh.
So Midday Connection, and it used to be, this would have been in the late 80s, early 90s. It was big. It was at Simpson. It was like a two and a half hour thing, because a lot of women were still home at that point in time. And so she had invited me to go a couple of times, which I rolled my eyes and thought, oh, well, got me out of work and she still paid me. So I'm like, all right, I guess I'll go. And you got food. Well, so, and I was young, you know, I was young and I had come out of high school, and you know, you get out of high school and you realize I don't have friends. Aside from the people that you went to school with, but it was like, I didn't really actually feel like I had adult friends, and nobody was in my world at that point. I didn't have people my age that were married, you know, starting a family. Exactly. So, you know, I go to Christian Women's Club or whatever, and here's these women, and they were, I mean, most of them were, you know, 5 years plus older than me, you know, up to 20 years older probably, but it was a community of women that were just fantastic. Just wonderful people and easy to talk to. And I was a good work, you know, I mean, I was willing to help and jump in and do whatever. And so I really enjoyed that. It was a once a month thing. And so it was probably 3 or 4 months into it. They used to do a special feature, of whatever, a company that was in town, or back then there were a lot of home parties. And so that person would come to the Christian Women's Club buffet, you know, or brunch. It was a brunch, and they would share. Well, so we carried different lines at the salon, clothing lines, jewelry lines, makeup lines, you know, whatever. So she asked if I would want to do the special feature. And I'm like, absolutely not. I don't talk in front of people. I'm like, I can't do that. She's like, oh, honey, you can do that. I know you can, you know. And of course, I was scared beyond. But this is exactly what I said to her. I said, well, I guess if I mess up, those religious women can't laugh at me, which I was completely wrong, because they can, because they're still human. But I didn't know that at the time. I thought you were like, you know, that new creation thing, whatever. And I had worked really, really, really hard to get all the stuff figured out and to be able to do that and speak in front of these women or whatever, which put you at the head table. And so I sat right next to the lady that was the speaker for that day, you know, and she was the sweetest lady. And we visited back and forth during the food and stuff. And then she got up to speak, and it was like she was talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never, in all of my years, you know, of going to church, I had never heard the gospel presented in a way that it was for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what that meant. I didn't know what it meant to have a personal relationship with Jesus. I didn't know any of that stuff. And it was just like somebody flipped on a light switch, because I felt so incredibly different. So at the end, there was a card that everybody had, and if you accepted Jesus, then they wanted you to put a star in the corner of your card. Well, I had said the prayer and I put my star, and my aunt was helping me clean stuff up, and she seen my card and she seen the star in the corner, and she just started to weep, you know, and she just looked at me and she said, do you understand what this, you know, really means? And I was like, not, maybe not really, probably. And so we sat in the car for an hour and a half that afternoon and just talked, you know, just talked. And she just explained it in such a way that, you know, like I said, I had never heard that before, you know, and I was a pretty rebellious kid. Like I said, I was gonna prove anybody wrong that questioned me. And I was kind of, stubborn isn't even probably the word for it, but it was
middle child.
That's exactly. Look it up. We're special and we know it. But you know, it was just, that was just like that aha moment for me that it was just like, wow, because I had always, my whole entire life, I had always feared death, and I feared death for everyone. Mm. I lost a cousin when I was 13, she was 12, and she was killed in an accident just instantaneously. And I was nearly incapacitated because, you know, I just kept thinking, you know, how does that work? Where does she go? You know, yeah, that was just an overwhelming time for me. And so I had just always had a fear of death. And then to realize that, you know, I questioned my aunt. I said, are you afraid to die? And she goes, no, honey, I look forward to it. And I thought, how does that happen? You know, how do you have that? So I understand now what she means. And that wasn't like it was instantaneous. That took a while to get to that point, especially when you're raising kids. You know, you don't think that you not being present to raise your kids would ever be a good thing. Mm. But the Lord knows. He's got that all figured out.
Right.
You know, he knows. And just learning that trust, you know, learning that trust in him. One thing, you know, that was kind of a different trajectory, however you say that word, in our life, when KJ was 13, he was diagnosed with cancer. And it was bad. You know, it was shocking. We had gone through every step leading up to that. The doctor had said that the chances of it being cancer was less than 2%. You know, they went ahead and wanted to do the surgery. And, you know, this 6-hour surgery ended up being a 9-hour surgery. And he had to stay on the ventilator for 24 hours because he had lost so much blood. But he had a softball-sized tumor in his pelvis, you know, and it was cancer, you know. And I remember just kind of sitting in the waiting room, and when they called, and first they called and said, the doctor just finished up. He's, you know, they're checking for clean margins, and then he'll be out to talk to you. And that was at like 5.5 hours. I'm like, all right. And it was probably 45 minutes later, they called us back up to the desk, and it was the doctor on the phone, you know, and I thought, oh, I thought he was coming out to talk to us or whatever. And he's like, Dee Dee, this isn't at all what we thought it was. And it is cancerous. We're going to have to separate his pelvis. We've got to proceed quickly, but this is a malignancy. And my only thought in this whole thing, because that we talked about that for like less than 2 minutes in the whole part, because they were sure that wasn't where we were headed. And I said to him, will he be able to walk? And he said, that's not something we're going to worry about right now. And gosh, you just talk about falling off a cliff. You know, I mean, that's what it felt like. Kyle actually ended up in the emergency room because he had high blood pressure that he really would come and go, but it wasn't really something that he was taking medication from. But between that and I think just the panic, you know, and the anxiety and stuff, that they just wanted to check and make sure he was going to be okay on that. But that was that's just where the Lord just said, hey, we're going to go a different way. And that's probably really where things get real serious in your life, you know. And I just remember just holding my hands out. And it's like, Lord, you have already shown me and told me and taught me with these boys that they're not mine. Mm. You know, they're not mine. And I have to be able to bring this to you with open hands, you know, and continue to hand him back to you, you know. And there was one night we had to take him to the emergency room because he got so sick and we just didn't know what was going on with him. And he had a lump underneath his chin that was like, just huge. And it's like, what is this? You know? And when we got there, I mean, they just whisked him away from us. And one of the oncologists came in. She's like, they've got to do a CAT scan. And I'm like, can this happen this fast? You know, I mean, you're just like, you realize that you have zero control. Like you have no control. And so for the Lord to just be able to step in and say, I don't need you to be in control. I need you to be silent. And that's what he told me over and over and over again, was be still and just be still, you know. And that was, we all say, I mean, I think every, including KJ, he was 13. And he was the one, He wanted to divorce us because he's like, I'm not doing any more treatments, Mom. I'm not doing this. Nobody asked me. I don't want to do this. I would rather be with Jesus than to go through this. I don't want to do this anymore. So he told his oncologist, he's like, I don't know what you have to do, but I'm not doing this anymore. And he really honestly wanted to go through the file, you know, the papers. He's not even the middle child. He's the baby. But I think he might have been a little spoiled in that whole thing. But, and at the same time, you know, it's just like, we all had to get on board with what this was going to look like. And when we were at our, like, the worst point of this 1 year's worth of treatment, one of our doctors said to me, she said, I think you need to have a second opinion done. I think it's time that there's a second opinion. So the second opinion turned into a third and a fourth and a fifth. His tumor was reviewed 9 times. He's in several different medical journals. We went down to MD Anderson with him. And that's where everybody, I mean, that's where everybody goes when you're at that point. It's like, what do we do next? And the Lord healed this young boy and mightily. And I had one of the, she is a pelvic sarcoma specialist. So, and she is world renowned. And we had already taken him off treatment at that point because Mayo Clinic had said, treatment's not going to do him any good with the kind of cancer that we now have, because it went from an osteosarcoma, which is a very aggressive bone cancer that a year's worth of treatment, you still have 50% of a chance to survive, to what is called a chondrosarcoma, completely the exact opposite. It's slow growing, usually only in old people, you know, not even in kids. And all of a sudden, Mayo Clinic's like, oh, we think it's this. Then it went to Boston, then it went to California, then it went to Alabama, then it went down to MD Anderson twice. And so we had pretty much sat down with our oncologist in Des Moines, and it's, and she is a believer and she's wonderful. So we sat down with her and we're like, what do we do next? And she's like, make a decision. She's like, you can trust this healing. You can trust this change in the diagnosis, and you can stop doing treatment, and we'll watch it every 3 months and make sure it doesn't grow again, or you can put him through the rest of the treatment, which was going to probably kill him in the long run. They had to do a feeding tube, if you can imagine, on KJ. He had to have a feeding tube because he couldn't even drink water. He was so sick, you know. And she's like, and I know you have a strong faith, so I know you're going to, you know, you seek the Lord on this or whatever. And KJ's like, I'm done. I'm not doing any more treatment, you know. So we pretty much just, like, literally put the stake in the ground and said, we totally believe in his healing. We totally believe that he is cured, and we're not moving past that unless the Lord shows us in a different way. So we get down to MD Anderson with this pelvic sarcoma specialist who walks in the room, and we were there for the scoliosis in his back. And what do we do with his hip? Because the way that they had to put him back together is for a whole nother day. But anyway, she walked in the room and she's like, introduced herself. She's like, I've looked over his records. And she said, and I don't agree with anybody, and I'm 99% sure this is osteosarcoma, and I want to start treatment today. I had on a t-shirt that we had made for him, for us, and it said, Live Strong, God Strong. And I was like, okay, Lord, you know, this woman is a very well-versed, she knows what she's talking about, but we're also trusting that you are the ultimate physician. Mm-hmm. And KJ's looked at her and he's like, I'm not doing treatment today. And she's like, well, you are. We have got to get you back on treatment. And I said, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, we came here for his spine. Like, we're not here to discuss more cancer. And she's like, kids don't get this. And I said, well, you can do all the research. You can have, you know, whatever you need to do for pathology, you can do it. But until you know that for sure, he is not here for treatment. And she was not overly enthusiastic with that response. But a week later, her PA called to say that she concurred and that she said, we didn't need to do more treatment. And it was like, talk about shaking in your boots and like really doubting, you know, but yet knowing that the Lord, that's where he had taken us. I mean, I left out the majority of the story of the different nurses or physical therapists or, you know, people that came into our path that God just put there for that minute in time to continually to be the concrete that kept saying to us, trust me in this, trust me in this, trust me in this. Mm. You know, why we went through it, I can look back now and see how much it changed us and how much it changed, you know, I would say our faith as a family, but especially for Kyle and I. And, you know, when you've been through that, okay, so shortly after KJ, we were done with, we did continue for 10 years, he continued to have scans. And for 5 years, we did them every 3 months. And we went back and forth to Houston twice a year. But he was just coming out of all of that when Maddie got sick. And that was before, you know, that was before we had known Libby and her family since the kids were in high school, you know, or whatever. But, you know, you have some life experience and you have some, you know, some faith that just can walk you through some of those situations. And it was just interesting how that kind of, you know, matched up, I guess, or whatever. But yeah, so that was, you know, it was just a faith builder, but trusting the Lord is not the hard thing for me. You know, trusting the Lord is an easy, really, honestly, that's the easy part for me. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm lazy in that because I'm like, Lord, I know you've got this, you know, and I do feel sometimes like I could put forth, you know, put forth more, but the worry, the constant angst is that part goes away after you've, you know, after you've lived that and watched your, you know, your kids go through that. We were kind of told that KJ probably wouldn't have children, you know, and the Lord said, hey, hang on, I got this, you know, so grateful for that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an incredible story and just such a great like life example of just living out your faith and just trusting. It sounds so easy.
Oh, yeah.
And I agree with you. For some people, it does come easier. I do think that's that gift of faith, you know, that the Bible talks about. And some people just have that where it's like there's a peace that they can have in situations like that.
Right.
That's difficult to explain.
Right. It is.
But at the same time, God offers that peace to all of us too, right? And so like, we have the opportunity to just fully trust in Him. And even if that doesn't come naturally, it is so peaceful and it's so worth it to just look to Him. He's got this. Like you said, like He's got this. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need us to come in and do it all. And it's so freeing when you get to that point and you can just trust.
Well, I long to be lazy in the Lord. Like that's awesome because that's one of my struggles is like, I constantly have to remind myself to trust in the Lord and not do it myself. And, you know, I'm not going to do it myself. I'm like, that's going to be my new slogan. Just be lazy in the Lord.
Lazy in the Lord. Be a t-shirt. Make a t-shirt.
There you go.
Like lazy and strong. I think you need both.
Lazy and strong. There you go.
Strong and lazy.
Strong and lazy.
It is amazing, though. I mean, when he talks about like our weakness is his strength. I mean, there were times at the hospital, like Kyle was still working and sleeping in the hospital, you know, and leaving at 2 o'clock in the morning to, and he worked at Anderson Erickson. He had a very, very physical job and, you know, and then he'd come back and he'd lay on the couch again, you know, but the Lord just supplied as we needed, you know, the Lord just supplied. There was one time that KJ was so unbelievably sick and Kyle had left to go to work and one of the resident doctors came in the night and I was like, his breathing is just off. He goes, yeah, I hear that. Well, the next thing I knew, our oncologist was in there and it was like before 7 o'clock in the morning and her eyes were big. And I thought, oh, this doesn't seem good. He had C. diff and he was so sick with this C. diff that his numbers were just tanked out and he was very sick. And, she said, I want you to call Kyle, which that alerted me a lot, you know, and she said, I want you to call Kyle. We're going to get him down. We need to do a chest x-ray. We got to see what's going on here, you know, or whatever. Well, I couldn't just call Kyle, you know, I had to go through the switchboard. It wasn't open at that time or whatever. And so they sent to come, you know, they were just taking his whole bed and going down or whatever. And there was a knock on the door And so I thought, I'm like, come in. One of my best friends was standing there. She had had an appointment at the plaza, and she got at Methodist, and she was a little early when she got there. And she said, I thought, she told me, she said, the Lord just said, go check on Dee, go check on her, whatever. I'm not, there aren't even words. I mean, I literally just fell into her arms, you know, and she helped me down the, you know, down the hallway as we went downstairs, you know, or whatever. And I said, how did you know to be here? You know, and she's like, God, I just knew I needed to be here, you know. And she was able to get in touch with Kyle. He was able to get there, you know, and it all, obviously it all worked out. KJ just needed extra doses of antibiotics at the time, but that's just one of the millions, you know, I mean, hundreds of stories in that time of our life where it was just like, not only did God show up, but he brought us the people that we needed to just hold us strong as we could be weak and just trust in him. And it was, you know, I look back on those days and I think, wow, you know, just, it was never us. It was always him, you know, and he would, a verse, a card, a friend, a, you know, a call, a meal, whatever it was, the timing of it was just, only God could orchestrate that. We actually, when we were over in Iowa City, when he was getting ready to have his port put in, you know, we were sitting in the room waiting and we made a banner because I was like, KJ hated the word chemo. He's like, Mom, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this. And so we wrote out, Christ has every moment orchestrated. I still have that. We did it in crayons, you know, and just that was on our door. We put it on our refrigerator when we got home. That was always our thing. It's like, God's got this, you know, he's got this. And the more we would just surrender to him, you know, the more he just kept moving these mountains that we had one nurse in Iowa City. And I swear to you, I thought I should go make sure she was actually a nurse or was she actually just an angel that he brought into our room, you know, because she was the one, she said, this boy needs to be closer to home. He needs to be doing his treatments in Des Moines, because his brothers are so important to him. You know, they were in college and school, you know. Mm. And I mean, she moved mountains for us. I mean, it was just, you know, I look back at it and it was the hardest, but at the same time, the greatest blessing as the people that we met, you know. Yeah. Anyway, I could talk about that forever. And we're about out of time.
That's an incredible story. And just, thank you for sharing. That's
you
awesome.
Bet.
That's good life lessons. And it's awesome how God knows exactly what we need when we need it. And if we just surrender, like you said, exactly. He'll take care of us. It's incredible. So we got a few more questions before we wrap up.
All right.
One is, how did you start coming to Indianola first?
Casey and Zoe actually started coming here first. Pastor Jared was counseling them, doing marriage counseling with them, and he married them. And the Lord was moving us at that point. We'd been in the same church for a really, really, really long time, loved everyone there, but I knew that he was moving us. And I think, too, I would say that where we were, I was saved first. I was going to church with the same aunt that, you know, shared the Lord with me or whatever, and then that was in Martinsdale. Then the community church started here. So I would say that Kyle went to my church. And I would say that when we came here, it became our church.
Mm-hmm.
So his growth and his feeling, we had literally sat in the pews, I think, or back then we did still have pews.
Yep.
We had pews then, but I think we had been here for probably three. We looked, you know, we kind of went to different churches. We always kept coming back here. And I think it was probably the third week in that we were consistently here where Pastor Jared came up and asked Kyle if he would help with the egg drop, because that was the first year of the egg drop. And we were shocked that, like, we didn't hardly know. I mean, we knew people, but we didn't know people. But then to, like, be placed in a place of where, like, they were going to value your help, you know, or whatever. Kyle was just, like, on cloud nine. I mean, that just spoke volumes to him that he was going to be, you know, a helpful, that there was worth in us, you know, sitting there, whatever. So
what year was that?
Kids got married in 11 years ago, was that 13? Probably 10 years ago. Yeah. Right at 10 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. 10 and a half years ago, probably.
Because I thought, like, when I first started coming here, that's when they first did the egg drop. Yeah. I was like, okay. Yeah. So
about the same time.
Right around the same time.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the egg drop is.
So it was the Easter.
Huge Easter outreach.
Thing. They basically loaded a ton of Easter eggs with candy, and then took them up in a hot air balloon, and we're going to dump them over.
At the balloon field.
Yeah.
Well, that's fun.
Mm-hmm. And
well, we never got the balloon off the ground. Yeah. Because the weather was always awful.
A couple years in a row.
The first year that they did it, they had 10,000 eggs, Easter eggs that they were putting out. We shut down traffic in this town for 2.5 hours. People couldn't even get out there. The cops, they didn't tell anyone.
Yeah,
they didn't
tell. It was shared on the radio station.
Oh, in like South Dakota.
Oh. And so like everybody showed up.
It looked like Laser Fest was happening at the balloon field. People couldn't even get parked. Kids didn't even get to leave with candy because we had over 10,000 people show up for the first one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pastor Jared. You'll have to ask Pastor Jared about that.
The balloon didn't get off the ground, but they had a helicopter. They did.
The third year, I think. Second or third year, there was a small helicopter that pitched out the candy. Petting zoo and face paints and bounce houses and music and
there's
props for pictures. But the weather was awful.
Yeah, it's tough.
Well, yeah.
Freezing cold. It was just the weather was never conducive for that, so... After what? Did we do that 4 years, I think?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Four, I think. And anyway.
Then it was discontinued.
Discontinued.
So where do you sit on Sundays?
We're Eastsiders all the way, buddy. We've always been Eastsiders from the time that we walked in, the first time we came in that door, and we plopped right in that section. And we've tried. We've tried to move around, and you can't. You can't move. You can. You guys do pretty good at moving out, but
they've been sitting in the same seat two or three weeks in a row.
That's the best side.
We like moving around.
No, I can't.
But we did. John called us out last Sunday. We sat in the same seat twice, so he was like,
"It's the best area. We got the best people on our side."
I like all the sides.
I like to wave at all the sides, but when you sit someplace for a long time and then you move, it feels like you're in a different. We tried upstairs one time.
It's different.
That was not work for me. I probably would fall asleep, actually. Because I know they can't see me if my head is nodding off. But it's riveting preaching, so I could never fall asleep.
Absolutely.
Never,
yep, 100%.
Never. Yeah, nice never. You're welcome. You're welcome. And the worship is just top-notch anyway, so yeah, I'm ready to go.
So what is the most daring thing you've ever done?
Besides getting married at 18?
Yeah.
second
most daring.
Oh gosh. Well, you know, my dad was kind of a thrill seeker. So I had my first three-wheeler.
Yeah.
Honda three-wheeler. I was either 7 or 8, and I moved up to a mini bike by the time I was 9 or 10 with snowmobiles. We ice skated every single day, and my dad would try to clear the pond off with a tractor and usually break through the ice at one point of the year. gosh, I'm not a thrill seeker.
Okay.
I'm really not a thrill seeker. Joining the worship team was kind of one of my most sweatiest things I've done.
Singing at the Iowa State Fair?
Singing at the Iowa State Fair. Thank you. I did do the national anthem. No, because I got to be up on top of that building and no one could see me or know that who I was. And I didn't tell anyone except, I didn't tell my parents till the day before.
We happened to be there that day.
I didn't want my mom to be nervous for me. Okay, repeat the question one more time. What was the most daring?
Daring, yeah. That's okay.
I'm not a very big, you listed off
a number of things.
A very big dare. I mean, yeah, I mean the dirt, or the, you know, my little, so Kyle had, my dad got that for me. I think I was 9, I think. Kyle had it redone for me for my 50th birthday. Oh, so I cool. have it. That's I don't awesome. Write it very much anymore. Now my grandkids want to write it.
Sure. Like, no, yeah.
Absolutely not. That's grandma's. You don't touch that. That's granny's.
You won't let us write her dirt bag. No.
Nope. That's mine. You don't get it. Yeah. You don't get it.
Use it to chase him around the yard.
There you go.
Oh my gosh. I tried to give one of them a ride and I was it one of Dylan's boys, I think, was just scared, like literally like squeezing. I'm like, honey, you got to relax. Grandma's been doing this for a really long time. You know? But yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we really appreciate you being on the show, sharing your story, and it's been a ton of fun.
Thank you.
Getting to know you more, and it's, yeah, we love it.
Thank you very much. It was fun to do this.